Welcome to the St. Andrew's Sunday Morning Sermon Podcast. No matter who you are, where you've been, what you believe, or whether you believe anything at all, you are welcomed here. I'm Reverend Mark Feldmeyer, St. Andrew's Senior Pastor, and I'm glad you're here. There are many ways to connect with St. Andrew's community from wherever you happen to be. If you're interested in learning more about St. Andrew, I'll be mentioning some ways to connect with us at the end of today's podcast. Let's take a moment now to hear this week's scripture reading before we jump into today's message.
Loved ones, today our reading presents from Psalm 82. Psalm 82 is considered one of the most challenging, probably, to interpret. The psalm is layered with something for nearly everyone along the theological spectrum, from questions about the trailhead of Israel's religion, connections to the prophetic witness for God's justice and God's involvement in human history, and maybe a few little shout-outs to the New Testament. While agreement is never the goal of a contextual or personal experience, there is a sense of the text moving us towards a God committed to justice for the most vulnerable among us. Let us hear this word from Psalm 82. God has taken his place in the divine council. In the midst of the gods, he holds judgment. How long? How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Selah. Give justice to the weak and the orphan. Maintain the right of the lowly and the destitute. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. They have neither knowledge nor understanding. They walk around in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are shaken. I say, you are gods, children of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, you shall die like mortals and fall like any prince. Rise up, O God, judge the earth, for all the nations belong to you. May God add a blessing to the reading of this word.
Friends, it's really a joy to welcome to our sanctuary this morning to give us the message, Reverend Dr. Tripp Fuller. Tripp has been here this week along with Tom Ord, who's also here today, helping us do some work around new expressions of Christianity in the postmodern experience. And Tripp comes to us as a theologian, an author, he's an ordained minister, he's also a father. And I learned actually this morning he also wrote a movie and starred in it, and he is quite the man and quite the legend. I am grateful for his work that he's doing, especially through his podcast called Homebrewed Christianity. It is the most downloaded theology program in podcasting, and we are blessed and encouraged to have him here today. Would you give a warm St. Andrew welcome to Tripp Fuller?
Some gods deserve atheists. It's a sermon title, so I get to say it. The last few days, we were running an event called God After Deconstruction. And over the last few years, that word that is a philosophical word has been picked up by a growing number of people where the image or understanding of God they were handed ran up against a host of different realities. And that concept of God had to be deconstructed. Tom and I, as a part of this project, did surveys with thousands of people about what initiated faith transition in their life. What was the issue or question or challenge? And some said the God they were handed ran up against an encounter of intense suffering. And they wondered exactly how they're supposed to believe that a good and loving God possesses all power and is in control, and yet. And you can imagine the stories that occasion the "and yet," and that God, that image of God, had to be deconstructed. So what is God after that? Others were handed an image of God, and then they come to understand who they are, and somehow the love of God in Christ doesn't really love all of who they are or who their children are or their grandchildren are, and that God needs to die. It needs to be deconstructed. So what do you do after it? Others encountered God in a church, and then after 2016, over and over, the people that introduced them to Jesus thought God demanded walls and cages as opposed to bridges and turning enemies into friends. And that image they were handed had to be deconstructed. God is a concept that's in our head, and they aren't always the same. And as Christians, we make this weird wager that a homeless first century Jew named Jesus, who was executed by the state and ran around with some unemployed fishermen, is the image of the invisible God. Now, throughout the Hebrew scriptures, the image of God is constantly being changed and worked and deconstructed. Often there you hear language of idols. Idolatry is a problem because when you get God wrong, you get living before that God wrong. Idols demand sacrifice. Back then, you could see images of God that demanded sacrifices of children or enemies. But some of the ideas of God existing even in the church demand the sacrifice of our kids and other people's kids and our enemies. So what is God after deconstruction, and what do you do if you've had to do it multiple times? I am a Baptist preacher's kid and grew up in rural North Carolina. And so there are a host of understandings of God that had to get set alongside for me to end up hanging out with Mark. My family were church planters, and we moved in to, I don't know if you've heard it, it's one of the greatest cities of all time. It's probably ginormous, and you may have been in a big city like this. It's called Raleigh, North Carolina. When your neighbors were tobacco fields, and then all of a sudden you can see the neighbor's home. It's like, whoa, what is this? This is a giant urban setting. And we were church planting there, and I started from middle school on, as we moved in, going to an art school. I was in theater. And you know what happens in theater? You meet people from other religions, like Methodists. And you find out that they aren't the same thing as Catholics. But they do the baby sprinkling and not real baptism, and they seem like real Christians, so you might have to deconstruct that image of God you were handed and count Methodist. Then what happens if your best friend in theater is Jewish, and he introduces you to this wild thing called the Sabbath? You know, it's one of the 10. And then he wonders exactly how I am obsessed with believing the Bible when I don't do the Sabbath. And I'm like, of course we do. That's when we go to church. And he goes, no, God gave us the Sabbath trip because we were under a different law, Pharaoh's. And when we were liberated, when God heard our cry and gave us a new law, what is it like to serve this God is to have a day that no matter who you are, you attend to what's most important. God and the images of God around you, your family and your neighbor, and you're not doing that. That was uncomfortable. And then if you're in a theater department, you meet a host of people that are members of the LGBTQ community, and it's really uncomfortable when they're nicer to you than their God is to them. And you have to ask yourself, what do I do? The image of God I had over and over ran up to the reality of love and diversity and beauty that is there. And that you had to expand it. Are you going to say yes to God after deconstruction? Or are you going to defend a God that isn't even as beautiful as the humans you've encountered? I was saying yes over and over again, and I end up at a small Baptist college and volunteering at a very small Baptist church with youth, and then their youth minister leaves, and they're like, you're 19, you should clearly be in charge. And I'm like, okay, cool. I get to work 10 hours a week as a minister, and I'm not going to tell them I'm a philosophy major and cross my fingers half the time at church. But, you know, I know how to love people, and they were dealing with a lot of the questions I encountered while I was in middle school and high school, so I can do this. And week three, I got the first call where you freak out as a minister. When the other minister's on vacation and a hospital calls a church, they're like, well, is anyone else on staff? They're like, don't worry. The 19-year-old youth minister has this, right? And so I go to the hospital, and I go in, and like, I've never done this. And all I'm thinking is, don't throw up. Don't say something stupid. Just quote a Bible verse or pray. I'm like, I don't know. And I walk in, and I was told, you know, like, it's a young couple. They're a few years older than me, and they were in a car wreck, right? And when you go, and this over time, this has happened, you know, more and more as a minister, you kind of learn to gauge what situation of an emergency you're going in based on the floor and the number of things plugged in when you walk in the room. But I hadn't learned this out yet, so I'm freaking out, and it looks like there's like cuts and bruises and like a broken arm, and but they're breathing and there's nothing really super attached. And I'm like, oh. Again, this is not what I would recommend doing when you walk into a hospital room. You're like, great, you're not dead, nothing's broken, you know. And I'm like, all right, Jesus, thank you. I think I can figure this out. And then right behind me, as I'm like having this exhale and starting to smile, the doctor comes in and you hear him say, it looks like y'all are going to be fine. And he cracks. And if a doctor cracks, because they're only half human, if a doctor cracks, something serious is about to come out. And he said, but she didn't make it. And I heard, as the child she was carrying had died in the wreck, and I'm arriving to hold a hand as she gives birth to her dead baby. And I look, probably deer in the headlights, not knowing what to do. And she raises her finger at me and says, don't you say it. Don't. And I'm kind of wondering what the don't is. And you're like, don't you say God willed this. Now, I also grew up a particular Baptist. That's the Reformed side, the Calvinist side, where to demonstrate God's holy, loving power, God particularly redeems and saves some and not others. It's like the opposite of the Methodist Wesley tradition, right, where there's prevenient grace, where there's kind of like a giant blanket of grace over everywhere, and the only reason that that grace doesn't erupt moment to moment is because we prevent what God has given preveniently. Well, I didn't have that view, and I'm sitting there thinking, this is a part of God's particular providence, and she cut me off from saying what would be the greatest error I've ever made as a minister. And I realized that what was about to come out of my mouth is something I detested. And I could never imagine Jesus saying that. And 19-year-old Tripp left and realized that God had to die. That God deserves an atheist, because that God taught me to say something where I wasn't even being as nice as Jesus. Some gods deserve atheists. My favorite author, this is not like a nerd, like a scholar, but like my favorite fiction author is Jason Aaron. Does anyone know who he is? Oh, y'all are clearly not comic book fans. He's from Alabama. His parents were fundamentalist Southern Baptist. And when he was growing up, he had questions. It's a thing teenagers do, by the way, parents and grandparents, don't freak out. And he decided to actually tell his dad his questions about faith. And, you know, you can imagine what, if you have to take the Bible literally in rural Alabama in the 80s, they sound like. And, about science, about the atonement, about God's will, about does God really hate everyone in other religions, including the Methodists, does God, you know, all these kinds of things. And his dad looks at him and goes, look, it's Christianity. I didn't make this up. You either take it all or you get out. And he said, I looked at my dad and said, well, I guess I'm an atheist. He told me this story in lockdown because I like won a little Twitter fundraiser thing to like help raise money for comic book stores before like all the pandemic assistance came in. So I got to interview him for the podcast. And, you know, he's like, oh, great, you won. I'm so excited you were part of helping us keep comic book things alive and blah, blah, blah. You know I'm an atheist, right? Your podcast is titled Homebrewed Christianity. And I was like, yeah, but I also teach classes on religion and pop culture, and I think you're like my favorite atheist theologian. Which he is, but honestly, that's not a good reply email if you want the author that's already getting creeped out not to get double creeped out. But since he didn't want to lose the money to help the, he shows up. And we're starting to talk. And I love a lot of his work. But my favorite is his Thor run, when he got in charge of Thor. And so we're in this conversation, and I ask him, I said, well, how did you decide to start, when you got Thor, like how did you decide to start telling it? And he goes, well, here's the thing. Look, I'm an atheist. Thor's a god. But that god has a hammer. And he can't pick it up if he's not worthy. And so I decided I'm going to tell Thor, and I'm going to describe a God that's actually worthy enough that I might want to believe in one if I ever went around to believing in one. Because this God only gets the power of God if he's worthy. I want him waking up in the morning and going, am I going to use this in a way I can pick it up again? In right, if any of you have ever preached a sermon and your favorite atheist comic book author tells you that, you say to yourself, I will use this in a sermon later. This is gold. You're welcome. And so there you go. He's telling the story of Thor, and Thor is constantly struggling of whether he's worthy to be a god, right? And he sets this up, and Thor's like learning how to use power differently, and all this a beautiful story. And then, second big story, the God Butcher. And the first issue comes out. Thor's not even in it. It begins and you see a family in a family of five, and they're slowly dying as they're going across a desert, no water and pain. It gets down to the father and his daughter. He buries her. And the whole time you see the family praying and holding the, you know, it's on another planet, so it's not like a cross, but it's like holding a cross, going, God help us, all this stuff. And you see a father nearing death, having buried his whole family, then see like the random lagoon in the desert. And he goes running, jumps in the pool, is drinking up the water, looks up, and there's his God. And he pulls his, Marvel cross off and is shaking it in the God's face. And like, where were you? We loved you. We worshiped you. We prayed for you. You didn't come. What is your problem? What did we need to do? I just buried my family. He's just echoing the angst of Job, shaking his fist in his God's face, who's sitting there full, happy, and laughing at him. Now, if it wasn't a comic book, it might end there, but it is. So a magical sword that can turn him into the big baddie, and this one sword allows you to kill God, shows up. Convenient. You can just imagine him working out his daddy and God issues writing this, right? It's like, frank. Oh, yeah, you wanted to pray and take my tithe and then turn your back whilst I buried my family. Dead God. And then all that pain and shame running in him, all this grief, he's like, I'm going to go kill all the gods. And he starts going around from planet to planet, skipping around the multiverse, just slaughtering deities. But then Thor finds out, because some of the deities are actually caring for their people and helping the environment go here and bridging peace here. And there's all this turmoil going, and he discovers there's a god butcher, because his pain now led him to keep bringing pain upon other people. You see how this all going, and then you get the cool showdown and Thor worthy and boom shakalaka. You should go check it out. But he was telling me this, and I'm like, yeah, man, when I taught this in class, I just looked at the students at the University of Edinburgh and I go, Jason Aaron is channeling Psalm 82. And he looks at me like, what the hell did I get myself into talking to this guy? I said, no, it's a great one. Yahweh shows up at the divine council, and in the Old Testament, that's like where the gods all hang out. This is before they became monotheists. So it's like all the different tribal deities are hanging out. And then Yahweh walks in the room and is like, hey, I was journeying over here. I don't know if you've checked out your people recently, but you got a few big, fat, and happy ones and a bunch of starving ones. Have you thought about that? Oh, you're not getting off the hook over here, Moab. I just checked it out. You got more widows and orphans than anyone I've ever seen. How are you, like, you're charging interest on people while they're at worship and they don't know they're going to feed their family. Like, you can just, Yahweh's like, y'all suck. And then he uses the form, the psalm follows the form of a legal enactment in the ancient Near East. And you hear at the end of the text, read masterfully, by the way, Yahweh looks at the divine council and he says, oh, you are gods, but you will die just like mortals. Some gods deserve atheists. Some gods, idols that need to be destroyed, require sacrifice. Sometimes it happens literally, but when you get to know the stories of more and more people, it happens over and over in souls. Some gods deserve atheists. So when you think of a really big circle, and in it are all the definitions of God our species has ever come up with. Whoop. And over here, you have a big circle of, just say it's love. And it's all the definitions of love humans have ever come up with. Now, just like God, all definitions of love aren't the same. But like, we now think all the definitions of love where you do things like pray for your enemies, turn the other cheek, forgive without counting, going the other mile, those kind of things. Let's say that if someone was lost, you seek until they're found and throw a party. If it's the kind of love where you forgive them while they're executing you and insist the one you call Abba forgive them too, because they are human and don't know what they do. Just take all of those things that make us pumped about the story of Jesus and like all the love definitions that match that, and you put the Venn diagram over, and anyway, the definition of love you see in the story of Jesus connects with different pictures of God, that is like the one thing that I'm giving myself to as a Christian after deconstruction. And as I hear other people's stories, encounter new truths, saying yes to God again when you've left behind one that deserves an atheist, is saying yes to the love revealed in the person of Jesus and the promise that at the very source of all things is that love. Deconstruction is an invitation to ground yourself more deeply in the source of all things that knows your name, knows your face, and cares. Holy, infinite love knows the parts of you you like and the parts of you you don't, and says, yes, you are my beloved. If that love is to be revealed in any way in the person of Jesus, all of that is true about your neighbor and your enemy too. All of it. And yet we don't live it out because so often we embody our idols, our images of God that are less than the God who is love revealed in the Christ. And so may you take a chance to do what Yahweh did in Psalm 82 and condemn some images occupying the space of God that lead to harm and death in our world. And may you say yes to the risky adventure of giving flesh in your life and together as a community to the love of God revealed in Jesus the Christ. Amen.
Thanks for tuning into this week's podcast. If you'd like to be connected to learn more about our St. Andrew community, or would like to financially support our work, including this weekly sermon podcast, I invite you to visit gostandrew.com or email us at connect@gostandrew.com. Be blessed and be a blessing. Until next time.